Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who also in 2005 directed his then teenage daughter Taylor in an episode of the television series Summerland, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
Wow.
That's pulling out of the old deep dive bin. How was that directing Taylor? Was she easy to direct?
Was she awkward?
Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. Was it kind of a teenage girl thingy? Because I'm
a little bit,
with that right
now. Definitely a teenage girl. Like, don't talk to me too much, Dad. And here's the thing. She was doing like, you know, community theater and things like that. And I think it was like her dabbling in, oh, well, Dad's in the business. Maybe I could try it. You know, that'll be an in. And so I remember I told the casting director, I said, I'd love my daughter to come in, but don't tell anyone that it's my daughter. Just have her come in and
read.
And then the showrunner reached out to me after he saw the tapes. And he said, so I like this person. I like that person for the other roles. And he said, for the teenage girl, he goes, you know, there are a lot of good choices, but I really liked this Taylor McNeil. Is she related to you? He was like, he really didn't know. He's like, that's that funny. Would be so weird. I said, yeah, it's my daughter. And so he goes, wow, well, that's the one that I like. So,
oh
awesome.
My goodness. So, did you coach her on the audition as well?
Very little. I mean, maybe she read it with me once or twice. I don't even think I did that. I don't remember. I was trying to stay out of it.
Oh my God.
And she got this part. It was like one line, I think, with a bunch of the other regular actors who, you know, were very used to this. So she was the fourth person in this double date scene. And I remember she was nervous. Like, I had never seen Taylor. Usually socially, she was really comfortable and confident and
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, she was, she's confident in her skin, kind of an extrovert, I would say, not an introvert, but she was having the nerves big time.
She had a meltdown. She was like, couldn't remember a line.
Oh, no.
Apologizing.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. How old was she at this point? So she was born in what? She was born in 90.
What year was this again?
2005. So she 15, was
14.
Okay. Same age as Keely right 14. Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So how did you help her when she was... Did you help when she was breaking down?
If you guys Google, I think that scene, it's Summerland. Jesse McCartney was the big name in it. And Taylor McNeil. They're going on a double date.
Right.
And I think her line was something like, nuh-uh, I like the ones that you like or something. It was like a real teenager line. Yeah, that's my daughter. It's on YouTube. You can find the clip because I've seen it before and sent it to Taylor. I'm like, it never goes away, Taylor.
Oh my goodness. That is crazy.
I know.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of tension there because you're definitely her dad. And she wanted to be cool with the other younger actors.
She wanted to be cool with the other actors. She stayed in touch with the female actress
the lead.
In the scene. Yeah.
Is this where she met Jack Osborne on this project?
No, that was on Dawson's Creek. She
that was
came
in
to
Dawson's.
Visit one time and Jack was guest starring.
Yeah. Got you. Yeah.
That's funny. Funny that you remember all
I remember all these little things, yes, about Taylor. So, yeah. I just want to, first of all, just say happy birthday to one of our admirals. Yes. Yeah, so one of our
happy
admirals,
birthday to Shannon down in Australia. Her mom
our youngest
out
admiral and, level patron, yes. Actually. I think she's maybe 22 20 now
old,
or something like that.
Maybe.
Or 21 today. Yeah. So December 10th, happy birthday, fellow Sagittarian, just like myself, Sagittarian and Megan. So there's half of the Delta Flyers team are Sagittarians. And so we just want to wish you a very happy birthday. And this week's episode is Collective. And we are going to run off and go watch this. We'll be right back with our review and discussion of the episode Collective. And Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Ooh, we are back. My goodness. This is a dense episode in terms of technobabble.
Yes.
And okay, you know, I've been dealing with having a bit of a cold. And so just to give you a little recap of how long this took me, typically we allot about a 2-hour time period to watch it, you know, pause, make notes, do our video recording reaction. This one was hard, but I'm going to tell you how long this took me dealing with a cold. Because remember, I stopped the recording after the intro without filming the entire intro. So that's how foggy my brain is.
Yeah.
So it took me a grand total of 5 hours to finish this.
Wow. A 45-minute episode. Wow. Wow. That's a record, I think, because I don't think I've ever taken 5 hours. No, usually I was the one done first, texting you going, Are you done?
So 5 hours later. Wow. Yeah,
this one was hard, not just because of your cold thing, but also it was hard on my end because there is a lot of like Borg techno stuff and just a lot of little nuance and detail that made it hard to recap unless you, you know, really pull apart some of that detail. So yeah, it was tricky.
Okay.
Let's do our poetry.
Let's do it.
Let's start with our poetry.
Here we go with my haiku for Collective. Away team captured. Borg teens calling the shots now. 7, the nanny.
That was good.
You like that? Okay.
That was good.
I can always tell when you like it. You have a different reaction.
Different laugh. It.
Yeah, that's that a different laugh. You give me a courtesy laugh every now and then, but then every now and then it's a more like, oh.
No, that was good.
Yeah. Okay.
7's the nanny. I like that.
That was the nanny. 7, the nanny. There we go.
All right.
Oh, should I? Is it better as 7's the nanny? Or I just said 7, the nanny, like that.
I like 7, the nanny.
Okay, so that's fine too. Yeah, that's more good. Poetic. Okay, yes. Let's hear the limerick.
Here's the limerick. Okay. Neelix wins all the away team's poker chips till the Borg have them caught in their grip. Borg kids are in charge, then first dies by electric charge. 7 shows the kids true companionship.
Ah,
yeah,
very good.
Yeah,
okay. Did that take a while or was that tough for you to
get? It took a little while.
It did.
I wanted to get Neelix conning on the poker game.
I know you were going
to squeeze that in. I had to get that. Yes. Yeah, I had to get us playing poker. That was very important.
Yeah. And it was so, oh my gosh. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go through everything. The teleplay, story, director, and guest stars. Let's go.
All right. So Michael Taylor wrote the teleplay.
Mm-hmm.
He's the writer of the script itself.
Both of us were wrong.
Both of us were wrong.
I took Banofsky and you took Braga.
I think just because it was a Borg episode. It was Michael Taylor. Story was Andrew Shepherd Price and Mark Gaberman. No idea. Don't know who they are. Do you know who they are?
They're clearly a writing duo.
Yes. They must have come in and pitched some story. And it got bought and then rewritten by the room, by the writing staff. And Michael Taylor got TV is a team effort. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Television is a team sport. Allison Liddy.
Oh.
Allison Liddy Brown, a dear friend of mine. So
She's not credited as Liddy Brown. She's just Allison Liddy.
She was Allison Liddy before. Then she married her wife, her partner of many, many years.
Wonderful.
And took on a hyphenated name after she directed for us. So Allison Liddy Brown, or Allison Liddy, as she's credited on our show, I met when we were doing Star Trek and I was shadowing on our show. And then I got an opportunity to shadow on a Nickelodeon kids show called The Journey of Alan Strange.
Okay.
And my kids watched the show and I was a fan of it. And I was like, oh, I'd love to shadow. Maybe I could direct one of those, which ultimately I did.
Mm.
But Allison Liddy Brown was one of the directors that I shadowed over on Alan Strange at Nickelodeon.
Okay.
And I thought she was so good. I recommended her to Mary Howard and Rick Berman. And so she directed our show because I had met her and made that recommendation. And I remember the actors loved Allison. My memory.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were integral in her directing this episode. You were
And I don't know why she didn't direct more, because she was she's such a good director. I've worked with Allison a bunch. Her first job, I just want to say, her first TV show that she ever directed was another Nickelodeon show called The Secret World of Alex Mack. And that show was very popular.
Yeah.
She started on Alex Mack and then moved on to Alan Strange and then has done a ton of things, including I brought her on to Chuck. She directed multiple episodes of Chuck. I brought her on to The Gifted. Mm. I brought her on. I did
Resident Alien?
Never Resident Alien. I've tried to get her a couple of times and she's really busy and she's good. And
yeah,
so she's hard to get these days, but she's awesome.
I do remember that all the cast did enjoy working with her. So that is kind of weird how they didn't bring her back.
Great with actors.
Yeah. Really, so she only directed this one ep. Right?
This is the only one she directed. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. Good with that.
She was great. Our guest stars, Ryan Spahn plays first. The leader of the kids. His first job was 1998, a comedy drama called Polish Wedding with Jeffrey Nordling was the star of that.
Oh.
It sounds like an indie sort of, like an indie film maybe was his first. We have Manu in, Icheb is introduced.
Manu and Taremi.
Originally, we know him as second.
Right.
But then we'll learn that in the end that his name is Icheb. His very first job was 1997. Mm-hmm. In Pacific Blue, the syndicated action cop show, Blue, and that was cops this. In Venice Beach
on bicycles.
That's on bicycles they were, and rollerblades.
And rollerblades.
It was kind of a silly show, but Pacific Blue was very popular in the syndicate. It was like a Baywatch kind of show.
Yeah, but were they? Wait a minute. I remember the rollerblades.
I think
are you joking about the rollerblades? Or are you
I think they might have been on rollerblades too.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Richard Hurd was in Pacific Blue though.
Oh, really?
So another.
Wow. All right. Okay.
We have Marley S. McLean, who's the young girl, which we'll learn is Mazzotti.
Yes. And I think she pronounces her last name McLean.
McLean.
Yeah.
McLean. Marley S. McLean. She was wonderful, by the way.
Oh, man.
She was so good.
I felt that she, for her, because she's clearly the youngest of the entire, quintet, is that how we say for five?
Yes.
She's the youngest, but yet I felt that she delivered the most powerhouse performance.
She was great.
Oh, it was such a good deal.
What I found out is she did go to law school, so she may be a lawyer now.
Yes. She also went to undergrad for theater at UCLA, my alma mater. So she was there.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, her first job was in 1996 on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Are you kidding? Oh,
yeah, and she only has maybe, six or eight credits.
She didn't do it for long, right? She just kind of like jumped in, dabbled
as a kid,
took off.
As a kid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our last two of the quintet are Kurt and Cody Wetherill.
Yes.
They are twins.
They are twins.
And they both had their very first job in a TV show called Safe Harbor that Rue McClanahan starred in.
And I do not remember that.
Yeah. The year before this in 1999, they were on Safe Harbor. And now Kurt works in electrics and he's a DOP. He's directed a short film. So he's gone more behind the scenes.
Wow.
And same with his brother, Cody. Cody became a location manager. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've all grown up. Those poor kids.
Yeah. They're all adults now. That's for sure.
They've gone off to the collective and just living their collective life. Let's talk about the episode.
Okay, so, we start out with basically an exterior space shot of the Delta Flyer flying through space. And then we cut to the interior of the Delta Flyer. We see Chakotay, Neelix, Tom, and Harry playing poker. And man, how this is such a funny scene watching Nathan Phillips pretending that he has no clue of what's going on in this game. He's saying out loud what he has. Like, what are you doing?
He's going heart, 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 heart. So funny.
Yeah.
I remember right out of the gate, I'm going to give Allison Liddy Brown some props here. Sure. I remember her having us really play poker. She's like, no, really play. I want you guys to really,
like
while we're lighting or rehearsing, she wanted us to really play a game. And it was great. It was the kind of thing that rarely, you know, directors rarely did sort of give you some acting exercise or, you know, getting in the mood for the scene beforehand. So I remember it was just really fun to shoot the scene. The whole thing was really fun.
It was kind of the boys' night out.
Yeah.
On the Delta Flyer show.
And we're sitting on the floor back there, like playing on the floor, which I remember when Allison pitched that to us, we were all like, whoa, that's different.
What are you want us to do what? But I love Ethan Phillips's reaction after he gets his final card. He makes that, he makes that sound, you know, that his reaction is just priceless. Love it.
And everybody's faces were hilarious. So funny.
They were.
Speaking of faces, then Paris, when it's his turn to bet or, you know, fold, he looks up at the window and Chakotay turns around. Everybody looks and there's a Borg cube.
Exactly.
Heading right toward us.
Yes.
And Chakotay yells, battle stations. And we like step on the chips.
Cards are flying. And then we also hear that Tom had a full house.
Yes, Tom's got the last. He's got the blow, as we say in comedy. That's the last line that's a joke.
There you go.
Is called the blow. So he gets the funny line at the end.
I didn't even know that. Is that that? Why do they call it that?
The button is what you would use in 1 hour, you know.
Okay, but drama, in comedy, it's called the blow.
Yeah, because you want to give it
blowing away the audience. What do you do?
Yeah, you want a big laugh at the end. Yeah, you want to go out of the act or out of the scene on a laugh.
I never knew that terminology. So thank you for educating me today. I appreciate that.
I wrote down that cube looked like it was about to crash into us. Like it was so close. How did we survive? I just don't know. I have no idea.
All right. So then we basically go to the intro credits. After we come back from that, we are back in the Delta Flyer interior. We're trying to evade the cube. We're taking hits. We're taking damage. Neelix asks why our sensors didn't detect them. Harry says, well, they used a dispersal field to mask their approach. So while we were engaged in poker, that's how they snuck up on us. We don't have warp drive because there's just too much damage to the plasma injectors. Chakotay orders Harry to work on that problem, trying to get those plasma injectors repaired so that we can have warp drive again. Now, we, in the process of this sort of evasion, and we're firing back at them, we do knock out their propulsion system with photon torpedoes, which I guess we still have an endless supply of them. They have us in a tractor beam. Chakotay asks for warp drive, at which point Harry says he's still working on it, and then this huge explosion happens.
By the way... Yeah. So Harry's working on the deflector shields.
Yes.
He's in a Jefferies tube.
Yeah.
Did the Delta Flyer have Jefferies tubes? I this is the one and only time I ever remember seeing that a Jefferies tube on a Delta Fly on the Delta Flyer.
Yeah,
I was like, why didn't they just build a little set that was the Delta Flyer version of a Jefferies tube instead of recycling the Jefferies tube set that we have standing by for every Jefferies tube scene.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like you were on the Delta Flyer anymore.
Yeah. You needed a different design, a more compact Jefferies tube maybe, because, you know, whenever I try to validate things where, for instance, I look at something and say, there's no way that there is that much space on the Delta Flyer for a full-size Jefferies tube, I immediately think about, well, it's like Doctor Who. It's like the TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside. That's the only way that I can validate it.
That's our TARDIS.
You're 1,000% right. No one has ever worked on a Jefferies tube inside the Delta Flyers until this episode and Harry on there.
Or even on a regular shuttle. Like, I've just never seen a Jefferies tube. Yeah. It just seems like they should have made a much smaller set out of that. And it just seemed strange to me.
I agree.
But what you're working on, the deflector shield does blow up. There's a big hit.
Yep.
And Harry is knocked out.
Yep. Knocked out cold.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we go back up front. Chakotay's calling for Harry. And then the lights go out.
Yep.
And the Borg call us and they have their famous.
Their famous Borg voice. Borg.
Yes. Yes. That we're going to be assimilated.
I'm wondering, is that just like a automated message Because
I think that's, it must be.
Right? Because the only Borg left are the juvenile Borgs. So it's not their voice. This is an adult voice, Borg voice. So it must be just the automated message they press.
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. Good.
It's like you call the phone company and you have to press one. It's that. It's the same computer as that.
We are the Borg. Press one if you want to be assimilated. Press two if you...
Yes.
Okay, fine.
But all right. But they say we're going to be assimilated. This big hole opens up in the cube and starts sucking us in with a red light, which I thought was...
What is that? Is that like turbo boost? I thought that was like turbo tractor. It was sort of like have a regular tractor beam. And once it turns, which is always, a green color for the Borg.
Yeah.
And once it turns red, that's like super tractor. That's what I thought. Oh, tractor beam plus.
It was an unusual color.
It was. I thought it was strange. What's happening? Why are they doing that?
We kind of fade into a Borg hallway and we see Borg walking by. It's kind of a fuzzy lens. It's like someone's POV walking down the hall. A
fuzzy dream sequence, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we see the Chakotay from behind.
He turns around and then you just hear him say, Neelix, Neelix. Yeah. He's waking Neelix.
When he turns around, Chakotay has all this Borg stuff on his head.
That's right. That's right.
He's starting to become a Borg. And then you hear Neelix sort of telepathically. And then Neelix wakes up and you realize it was a dream. Yeah. Neelix was having a nightmare.
Yeah.
And now they look like themselves. Mm-hmm. They're in the assimilation chamber. Paris is there with Neelix and Chakotay. Harry's not there.
No, I don't remember that at all.
No, I don't.
I
don't remember much of any of this except that poker scene. I remember filming that.
Oh, and by the way, in the intro for the Patreon patrons, I was talking about how leaving the playing card. So I was right on that one, right? I said I had the playing card. Yes. And the main reason why I remember that is because I printed up a couple of photos from still photographer. The still photographer took a couple, he came on set a couple of days, and I printed up a photo with me holding a playing card that I posed for him holding it to take to conventions. And I also printed up the photo of me sitting against the bulkhead, like kind of, out with the Borg stuff on me. That photo, not one fan selected that photo. Because I thought, oh, look at the detailing on that little silver stuff going on my face. This will be super cool. But I just think that, the selection of a shot of me basically unconscious really made no sense for anyone to buy.
Right.
So they're just like, you look dead. I don't think I want to put that on my wall of fame, in my in my office, my Star Trek office. So that's how I remembered this episode so clearly, because I printed up photos specifically.
That helps sometimes.
Which then became, they basically were not used because no one wanted them. It was like kind of sad. But let's go back to the episode.
Okay, so we're in the assimilation chamber. We reveal Paris is there too. Everybody looks normal. And Paris is really amped up.
Yeah.
He wants to find Harry. He's looking around. They find this botched assimilation, this creepy corpse. They lift the arm up. Paris is just really amped up. Chakotay even says, Tom, you've got to calm down. He tries to calm him down.
Yeah.
Chakotay says, there's a force field. We've got to find a way to disable it. But here's my thing.
Yes.
I feel like this threw me a bit. It doesn't seem like Tom would be.
Amped
He's not up? Someone... who gets amped up. He covers covers with a joke or Neelix was, freaking out would have made sense.
Yeah.
It just felt like we were out of character. This is the beginning for me. And I'll say this is a general note.
Okay.
I felt like the dialogue and things often felt very out of character in this episode.
Yes, I agree. Paris basically yelling, they've got three more potential drones here, screaming that out. And I thought, I don't know why he's doing that right now. It didn't seem characteristic for Tom Paris to do that.
No.
But I do have a question for you. When you guys look at the deceased alien where the assimilation was botched, you pick up the arm, that arm looked very lifelike. Was that actually a background person that was lying there? Yes.
I think so.
Yeah, it had to be.
And that's always tricky when you have a corpse in a scene because you have a live actor playing a corpse because they have to breathe.
They have to breathe. Yes, that's true.
Now that you mentioned this, I do remember trying to time with that person when we went over there for that shot to okay, make sure you breathe before they walk towards you so that you can hold your breath while they're there. It's always tricky.
Yeah. It just reminds me of back when season two episode, or maybe it was season one, Emanations. Yes, Emanations, when Harry dies, season one, when Harry dies and comes back to life. And they shoot the scene where, and then Harry's dead. And here I am like, okay, don't breathe. And I know, and my eyes are closed and I'm sitting here like, don't breathe. And the director is always going to get a little bit more extra footage. They're not going to just cut it short. So just remember having to really control and hold your breath for an extended period of time. So that was not the easiest thing for whoever was playing that corpse. So,
yeah,
Chakotay basically wants Paris to keep his cool. And again, very uncharacteristic. Chakotay says that they need to try and disable the force field around this room. We jump to an exterior space shot of Voyager flying through space. And then we cut to the Voyager bridge, where Tuvok says that the Delta Flyer's ion trail ends right here. And it's B'Elanna who is at Harry's station.
Yeah, right, she's there the whole episode.
She is.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, she set up shop in operations. And she detects one more vessel, a Borg cube. Janeway immediately goes to Red Alert and orders adjusting shield to rotating frequencies to protect against the Borg. Seven says that their propulsion system is offline, but it's strange because
Seven's very confused.
Yeah, she's like, wait a minute, this damage. Yeah, it's not severe. So drones should have repaired it by now. So I don't know what's happening. And then they start firing at us.
First, they fire at like our impulse engines, and then the sensor array. And B'Elanna's like, they can't seem to make up their mind. And Seven's very confused.
Yes.
She says their attack strategy is erratic. So
that's right.
It's just not, it doesn't make sense. This is not how a Borg collective would behave.
Yes.
Or a Borg cube.
We do knock their weapons offline, and Tuvok detects three non-Borg life signs. Mm-hmm. One Talaxian, definitely, and probably the other two are humanoid. But that's already kind of disturbing because now you're thinking, well, maybe Harry's dead. I mean, if you're only detecting three life signs, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Janeway wants a transporter lock on these three life signs, but their shields are interfering. So Janeway says to target their shield generators. And Seven, she only picks up five Borg life signs when there should be thousands. And Tuvok says, those shield generators that you want me to target, Captain, they're just too deep within the vessel to reach with our weapons. So that's when Janeway opens a channel. And she starts communicating with the cube. She says that, you guys are holding our crewmen and I'm willing to cease fire if you return our people. And of course, the Borg voice says negotiation is irrelevant. You will be assimilated. And Janeway says, not today and not by you.
I love that line.
Yeah, it was a great line. It's so sassy. So Janeway sets the term. She says, agree, or I'm going to resume firing. And the Borg scan Voyager and offer a return of our crew, a trade, for a piece of technology. Janeway says, well, what do you want? They said, navigational deflector. Janeway mutes the call, the audio, and Tuvok says, well, if we give them that, we can't even go to warp.
And Seven says, well, what they want from this deflector is to reestablish a link to the collective.
Right.
So clearly they've, something's happened to them. Seven gets it. They're trying to reconnect with the rest of the collective, and they need that piece of technology.
Right. Because their communications array was damaged, and our technology, they can modify it so that they can then contact the collective directly. Janeway says that we have to stall them until we find another way out of this predicament. And she resumes audio and says that she will consider the exchange, but she wants proof. I want proof that my crewmen are unharmed and alive.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I want to come see them in person.
I want to see them in person. The Borg say that, look, we've scanned the vessel. You've already scanned the vessel. And Janeway says, well, our scans are inconclusive, where they're not thorough enough. We want to see them. And the Borg agree one individual to transport over. Janeway designates Seven. Seven goes off
to
the turbolift.
Of course.
Seven.
Of course.
Well, but Robbie, in this episode, that does make the most sense. In other episodes,
because if we had Seven on our ship and send someone else, then we'd have Seven's insight right there next to us. Once we send her over, we don't have the same contact with her.
I don't know. Look at it that way.
There's that. Huh. Yes, there's that version. There's also a version of B'Elanna's on the bridge the whole time, and she's always in engineering. We call her for this stuff.
Yeah.
So like, why? This is some of the stuff that's out of character to me. It's like, okay, why is B'Elanna never in engineering this whole episode? Like, it just seems like that's where she always is.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. And that does make sense. It's weird. She's always in engineering. Why is she at operations? But I do feel that the situation that Voyager is in, that everyone is dealing with in this episode, is so dire that they really, that Janeway really needed somebody at the operations and communications console to handle business. And the next best person really after Harry is B'Elanna. She is the, you know, the all-star Starfleet employee. So it doesn't bother me to see her.
I'd buy that. Next, we have a space shot, a cool shot. We're kind of over Voyager in this shot.
Yeah.
And we can see the cube. This is the first time we really see it that I noticed well. Yes. And you start to see a lot of like damage on the cube. I thought it was interesting. It was a cool shot.
It was a cool shot. So, and you know, to have Voyager sort of facing off with the cube was cool as well. And if you looked at the upper, at the upper left section of the cube, there's almost like some green plasma that's oozing out at the top. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that or not. So
I wonder if, but it, you know, we eventually find out that it's a virus that killed everybody. It wasn't a battle. So I wonder if, like, is that damage just from us, from maybe that's the damage
because we Delta Flyer, of course, from the Delta Flyer, and also from Voyager. Yeah. Okay. Voyager's been shooting at them too, so most definitely.
Because I remember when I saw this, I was like, "Oh, they killed somebody." You know, they all died in a battle. Was kind of my
your thought process
thinking at that point, and then later on we find out it was this virus. So.
Right.
But anyway, cool shot outside. We go in the hallway. Seven is walking down an empty hallway of the Borg cube, and she's looking. It's very creepy. She's looking. There's dead drones everywhere.
You know,
drones on the ground. Drones laying on a console.
Yeah. Did you notice the background music?
It had a weird like synthesizer sound.
It was very reminiscent of the original series music in the background.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of an homage to that.
I did notice the music seemed a little different this episode.
Hmm.
So Seven gets a call in this hallway, and the Borg message says, go to a certain area, grid 63, subsection 01. So she heads to that place, and we realize it's the Borg maturation chamber. Super creepy, because there's babies in fish tanks.
There's
like a little Borg baby in a fish tank.
I did not know what to write. I wrote down, she sees an infant Borg in a, and then I sat there, I was like, what do I call
it's
that?
A fish tank. It looks like a fish tank.
I wrote a maturation tube, but that's not, you're better with the fish tank. You're right.
It looks like a maturation built into the wall.
It's
like a window into a tank behind a wall that the baby's floating in.
Yes.
And so she's there. And suddenly she's creeped out by this, and suddenly she turns around and there's a little girl who will learn is Mazzotti.
Marlee McLean.
She's there, and then she goes to join her other Borg friends. We see there's five of them.
Right.
There's five. There's Mazzotti there. There's First, Icheb, Azon, and
second.
Rebbe.
Remember, he's second at this
point. Second at this point.
His name yet.
Yeah, we don't know any of their names.
No.
And they ask her designation. She says she's 7 of 9. And they're speaking telepathically, I think, at this point, aren't they? Aren't they?
Oh, in the very beginning.
The kids, they're not saying words until First finally speaks. And he says the others, he starts telepathically saying, the others have been, and then when he gets to the word deactivated, he starts speaking English.
Yeah.
And I wondered why they did that. Like,
I don't know.
Was it just creepier?
Yeah.
Were they just learning English? Are they?
Well, this comes back to what I said earlier. Like, do they have an automated message where it says, we are the Borg, you know, you will be assimilated. So, yeah, I think they did it because it was creepier. That sounds more like it.
It's just creepy.
Yeah. Because
the others have been all telepathically and then
deactivated. He starts talking.
Yeah.
But they do realize that she is Borg too, but that, you know, they say that her infrastructure has been compromised and that they can fix her, which is kind of funny.
She's damaged.
Yeah, she's damaged. But then Seven says, all of you, you need to return to your rooms or your maturation chambers. Yes. And the lead Borg first says that they've matured enough.
I love that they still are like part whatever alien they were and yes. part, like they're not fully developed. It's true.
Yes.
Like the younger kids have hair.
Yes.
The girl still has her hair.
Yes.
Icheb has sort of some fuzz left.
Yeah,
he's like half bald. Mm-hmm. And then first, yeah. the lead guy is yeah. the most matured Borg. He's totally bald and
yeah.
and looks most, you know, the most like a Borg, a full Borg. So
yeah, and it's also interesting. Not only are they not completely mature, but their clothing is not completely on. Like you can see like gaps, like you can see their leg, yeah. their skin, you know? So that was interesting too.
Yeah.
So I loved after the lead Borg says that they've matured enough, Seven says, well, your thoracic nodes haven't even formed yet. And Second/ yeah. Icheb looks down at his chest. He's like, oh,
yeah.
And it's sort of like, I don't even have chest hair yet, you yeah. know? So that was a cute moment there. Very
yeah,
funny. One drone does say that they tried to re-enter their chambers, but the chambers were offline. And Seven asks what happened to the adult drones. And they don't know. They're completely clueless. They don't know what happened. And she goes to a console and she starts punching some buttons and realizes that the cube is severely damaged and that they won't be able to repair it alone. So she says that she can help them and that they must release the hostages in return. And the lead drone first says, well, this is not the agreement. Mm-hmm. And that's when Seven says, well, the agreement has been modified because I did not realize I am dealing with children. And Seven basically says that she wants to be taken to them at this point. And first says, okay. She first orders the others to take Seven over to our away team, or at least three mm-hmm. members of our away team. And he does say, if she tries to resist, assimilate her. So we know right off the bat, this teenager means business.
We go out to the hallway and Seven and Icheb are kind of walking and chatting. And did mm-hmm. you notice how slow they were walking?
Very. It was like molasses
slow.
Walk. It was like,
I'm sure it was because they only had, you yeah. know, 20 feet of a set.
They had no set to do it. And basically
not enough right. set not to enough. Walk and get all this dialogue out. No. So their solution was to walk slowly, but I hate that solution.
Yeah,
because they would not be walking that slowly. But as they walk, Seven says to Icheb, do you have a designation? And yep. he says, second.
Mm-hmm.
And she says something like, oh, so you were the second to come out. And he goes, no, I was the first, but I couldn't establish order.
Mm-hmm.
So I became second.
Right.
I love the close-up of Icheb, by the way, because
mm-hmm.
They put that fuzzy hair on his prosthetic bald cap, and it looks right. super cool.
I know, it looked great.
It was like a split mohawk or something.
It looked
like
great.
His head was bald. It looked very authentic and cool. So
yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to say after Marley McLean's performance, I'm going to say that the performance by Manu was the second best of the
yeah.
Borg kids in terms of he maintained. First to me was so petulant teenager that it annoyed the crap yeah. out of me.
Really?
Whereas I think Manu really, you know, kept it there focused and he didn't go overboard. I feel like first,
but
really
first was pushing because he was in charge. He was that, you know, he was the big bully.
I suppose. Yeah.
I bought it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine. But second did play a good second because he's not as,
yes.
you know,
yes. He was less secure with himself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He was calmer in his delivery of lines, more quiet, yeah. you know, more sedate yeah. and introverted. So I thought that was good too. So
yeah,
but I guess maybe because, you know, in my real life I deal with a teenager, so I kind of like when I hear that kind of like talk or that attitude, I'm like, no, you know, I don't want to hear that right now. So I'm a little biased against first.
That's
all right.
Funny.
Assimilation chamber, Seven yep. Basically arrives and tells Chakotay that the Borg kids are in control. The Borg girl detects that one of the captives was attempting to disconnect the security field, which was Tom Paris.
Yeah.
So she sends a shock through to you. Very good reaction, Robbie. You really
Thank
sold
you.
It for me. You did.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you very much.
And you flew back and Phillips had to catch you as you
yeah.
flew the bulkhead with where's that. So tell us a little bit about that scene. Do you remember any of this filming?
I don't
this?
Remember.
Okay,
any
that's
of
all right.
This. I really don't.
That's okay.
But I did think the little stunty fake, you know, shock was good. And I love
yeah.
her line when she says, He's not permanently damaged. He's learned his lesson.
Right, right, right. Actually, I think he's not permanently damaged came from Egypt. And then she said, yeah, and she said, he learned his lesson. And again, the way she delivered that, being the youngest kid on that set was, it was good. And she gives you that look too.
Yep.
And Liddy uses a lot of close-ups in this episode, right? Just like boom, really, really tight, which we don't see that all the time. And I thought that was cool. I thought it was really cool. Yeah. So Seven tells Chakotay that the Borg are prepared to negotiate for their release and that she will return. And Chakotay, the last lines as Seven is leaving with the other Borg juveniles, he says, give my regards to Harry. And then I wrote in my notes, question mark, question mark, question mark. What did you get out of that?
That was him reminding Seven that they don't know where he's at. So she needs to look around. But she didn't. That's what I got from it. Okay. Like,
yeah. Because like, I was like, is that
he's
code?
Not here. You need to keep looking for him. He's somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And they clearly, and the kids don't realize that he's here. So we know he's somewhere
right,
here.
Right. Yeah, like he can't say it out loud because the kids are there. The drones are there. So makes sense. Thank you for clearing that up. I was completely confused. Okay.
We go out in the hall next, and Second now demands the deflector that she's seen the hostages.
Yep.
And she says, well, I'm not authorized to give you that. Mm-hmm. I was just sent here. You know, my only job was to confirm
Observe,
that they're here.
Yeah, confirm, that's and right. I must go back and report. That's it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And then she asks Second, she says she wants to take one of the dead drones back to figure out why they're all dead, because whatever killed them could be a danger to all of them.
Right.
So they think about it for a second and then they agree to that.
They don't even, it's not even a second. I mean, it's really? Just such a, like, to me, it's such a difference in dealing with Second as opposed to dealing with First. Like, First is just so difficult and Second's just so easy. Like, you know, he's like, deflector array. She's like, oh, no, I'm not authorized. He's like, okay. He's totally okay with it. And then she says, okay. And also when I go back, I need an adult drone and a data node to take back to Voyager for analysis. And Mazzotti says, well, why? And Seven says, oh, something happened on this vessel that no one understands. All the adult drones are deactivated. And if it happens again, it could endanger all of you. And quickly, they're both like, yep, go right ahead. So I love this scene because First is not in it. And Second and Mazzotti are so easy to deal
with. That's the kind of teenager you want. The cooperative teenager.
Yes. Any teenagers listening out there, just take the lead of Mazzotti and Icheb and just, you know, cooperate. Yeah. It's just going to be easier on your parents and yourself in the long run if you cooperate. That's all.
We have a space shot of the cube in Voyager again. We go to a hallway scene.
Different angle though, right? It was a different angle.
Mm-hmm. Different angle this time. They do go back and reuse the first shot once later on. But
what does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Janeway and Tuvok are in the hallway. They're trying to figure out where Harry is and how to retrieve him. And Tuvok thinks, well, maybe he ejected. That's why we can't detect him. Maybe he's not even you know, in the cube, maybe somewhere else. We cut inside sick bay and the doctor is scanning a dead drone. Do you know who that was?
Keith.
On the table? It's Keith.
Yeah.
Who was often my stand-in.
It's so funny. It doesn't matter what alien makeup you put on Keith. Both Robbie and I are going to know immediately. Him. That's Keith. There he is. He's he's a Borg. He's a Klingon. He's a this. We know every time Keith is on
very
camera.
Specific.
He's very, his face is very unique as well, I think. Yeah. So it's hard to not know that it's Keith, but you're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was the dead drone there. Yeah. I do remember he always loved doing the drone stuff. He loved
it. Did he really?
He did. I think partially because obviously he gets paid more money.
Yeah, of course. He's the featured extra at that point.
He's a featured extra and he's making more money for the time he spends with the makeup and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But Janeway and Tuvok enter. The doctor shows them his analysis that there was a space-borne pathogen that adapted to the Borg physiology. And the doctor reassures them it's inert now. It's not a danger. But the death of all of these drones is what triggered the maturation chambers to open. That's why the kids were safe from the virus. And then when they all died, somehow these chambers opened and freed the kids.
Right.
And the doctor also says it only attacks cybergenic organisms. So it's not going to hurt them.
Right. And Seven is in this scene as well. She's there because she's the one that says the maturation chamber was designed to protect developing drones. So she's sort of off to the side, really.
Yeah.
She's there.
But then Tuvok, I can't believe it. He says, well, what if we revive this virus and neutralize the five Borg?
Yeah.
I was like, what? Again, out of character. Like Tuvok, I just don't see him being the one to say, well, let's use a bioweapon and kill these innocent children. It just seemed out of character.
True. And it's a little also out of character for the doctor to protest as well. I mean, the doctor immediately is like, he's still a program. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So for him to go like, oh, these are children and that would be murder. It was like, why are you talking like that? So
it seemed out of character. A lot of things in this scene. Janeway asks Seven if she thinks that they'll kill our people or the hostages, and Seven says yes, I think they will.
Mm-hmm.
So Janeway says, prepare this pathogen, let's have it if we need it,
option. So she's clearly, she's not going to do it right off the bat, she's gonna wait,
She wants to see the drones herself. So now we cut over to the mysterious Jeffries tube in the back of the Delta Flyer
of the Delta TARDIS, okay.
And Harry wakes up.
He regains consciousness. And why does he do it? From the constant chirping of his comm badge. So he crawls out. And once again, I looked so uncomfortable crawling out. And I've talked about this before. It is so much pain on your knees. And towards the end, I would say, I need the knee pads. So I would put on knee pads from production would provide me with these two, you know, knee pads that I would put on. And that was the only way.
Well, there was this waffle grating on the floor. It was this really, uncomfortable grate on the floor that didn't really read as a grate. I don't know why it had to be so.
Yeah. And it wasn't metal and it wasn't soft. Hard plastic. Yeah. So that was just the worst. Yeah. So I crawled.
Harry comes out and he does talk to the computer. He asks the computer, who is it? It's Voyager. He tells the computer to respond on the same carrier wave that they are transmitting on. So it will stay under the radar.
Right.
The computer says that's going to be a significant modification. And Harry responds, I am way ahead of you. So he's making the modifications. He's on his way to communicating.
Yeah. And I like how Harry enters the Delta Flyer cockpit. He has his phaser drawn. He's all ready. Yeah,
ready for action.
Yeah, he's ready for action. And he does push a few buttons and looks out of the window. And we have this awesome shot, which reveals it's sort of a pullback from the cockpit. You see Harry in the cockpit.
Inside the cube, you see that that it's locked into the tractor beam kind of spot being held by these clamps or this energy. Yeah. And
it's clearly, and as the shot keeps pulling out further and further, you see two other alien ships that are also housed in this cavernous Borg hangar bay, basically. I mean, this thing is massive. It's the size of like, I don't know, 100 football fields, it looks like. And but it's interesting because you're like, wow, look, there's other aliens that they just captured.
Yeah.
And cool shot, though.
Yeah, very cool shot. Mm-hmm.
We come back from commercial break with another exterior shot of Voyager next to the cube. And then we
repeat,
jump.
Repeat.
Yes, repeat.
That was a repeated shot.
Repeated shot.
But that's fine. We haven't moved.
Yep. Then we're now back into the interior of the Borg cube. Janeway and Seven are now with the five Borg kids. Janeway is trying to reason with First, the lead drone, and she has a new proposal. She says, look, you don't have to rejoin the Hive. You were all individuals not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And then she starts sort of speaking to their individuality. She says, you. She looks at Icheb or Second and says, you're Bernali. And she looks over at Mazzotti, or at this point, young girl drone, and says, you're Norcadian. And she's trying to sort of
the young girl, when she says you're Norcadian, the young girl remembers.
She does remember the planet. Like, Theta class planet. With binary stars. She does remember some stuff. So Janeway's doing exactly the right strategy. She's trying to speak
First
to her humanity.
Gets pissed off. He's like, he sees that that Janeway's getting to them.
Oh,
so he
lunges
grabs
at her. Oh
yeah,
my goodness.
And he's with his Borg arm kind of presses her up against the wall or something.
Yeah. I just kept thinking, you disrespectful teenager. Don't you know Janeway pays the bills here? Okay. That roof over your head because of Janeway. What are you thinking? So I was upset. Yeah.
But she's smart. She says, you know, you cannot have it yet.
Yeah.
And if you assimilate me right now, you'll never get it.
Well, actually, she says she can't give it to them. She didn't say yet. She goes, I can't give you the deflector, but maybe we can help you repair your damage on your communications array. I can't give it to you. And Janeway, he sits there and he thinks for a second. And he says, okay, 2 hours. And then the hostages die. So he gives us a time limit now.
Yeah.
Another exterior space shot of Voyager and the cube. Another repeat, probably. Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Voyager bridge now. Janeway says she's bought 2 hours. She asks Tuvok about the pathogen. He says it will be ready in 2 hours. Torres does ask Janeway if she saw the away team. So now there is a little bit of concern for Tom Paris from his love.
Finally,
because we've seen in earlier episodes where honestly, Tom could have been a complete stranger. She it seems like she had no concern for him. But now, for all you PT shippers out there, you see Torres genuinely concerned about her boyfriend. Yes. So I like that
movie. She doesn't call him out individually.
No, she goes, did you see the away team? She didn't say, did you see Tom? Which would have been a little, I don't think that would have been the right way that Torres would have said that anyway, right?
Maybe not.
Yeah. Okay.
She also says there she can't believe that they're negotiating with children. Like she's like, I can't believe we're doing this, which was very belonging.
I love Tuvok's line. He says, the juvenile drones are contemptuous of authority, convinced that they are superior. Typical adolescent behavior for any species, and 1,000% correct.
Yes. then there's a transmission from Harry.
Yes. They think it's from the cube, from the drones, but no, B'Elanna picks it up and it's Harry calling in. Janeway asks, Tuvok has isolated his coordinates, and Janeway asks how far he is from the shield generator. And Tuvok says 800 meters. So she asks Harry if there are any plasma charges aboard the flyer and if he's willing to go take a walk, a hike. Tuvok will guide Harry to the field generator because, yes, there were plasma charges there. And Janeway says if he destroys the field generator, he won't have to make the trip back. So that's the one plus, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like I didn't play this the correct way.
Really?
Yeah. I felt like I should have. When she asked, like, are you willing to go on a walk right now through this Borg cube? I think there should have been a little moment of like hesitation of like, oh, F myself. Like, what am I getting myself into?
Especially because he's so freaked out when we see him in the hallway later.
Yes. So that would have helped because it just almost seemed like
too cavalier.
If Janeway was saying, hey, you want to go for a hike in the holodeck later with me where we hike over in Lake Tahoe? And Harry's like, yeah, sounds great. I mean, that was the reaction that I felt that I gave here.
I didn't catch that, but that makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah.
We go out to the hallway. Icheb shows up with Seven. He says, I've got the technology you wanted. They start talking, and he says to Seven that he knows she was a drone for 18 years and that he accessed her data file, and he knows that she was a juvenile when she was assimilated, like him. And she says, yes, she was a juvenile. And then they keep talking. She's trying to get him to remember when he was assimilated.
Yeah, his childhood memories. And it's funny because he doesn't even know what childhood means. Like, he's not even sure what that is. He's like, what?
But when she starts questioning him, his voice starts to tremble.
Yeah, I wrote down, his voice sounds digitalized. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah.
Sort of. It has a digital quality to it.
But I felt it was emotion, that he was starting to feel emotion.
Oh, and that's why what his made voice it do that.
Getting,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's a good explanation for it too. Yeah.
But she says, I can repair your subvocal processors. Right. She starts to scan him. At first, he's a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
But then he says
it won't hurt. She says
it won't hurt. And so she scans him to try to correct his subvocal processor.
Yeah.
And he comments, he looks at her hair.
Yeah.
And he says, your hair is like my mother's.
Yeah. This color. This is his exact lines. This color. My mother's hair is this color. And I thought that was very forward of him and somewhat inappropriate to actually touch her hair while he was doing it.
He doesn't know that. But I thought this was great because she was triggering his memories and starting to bring out the humanity in him.
Yes.
And of course, as soon as that happens, First has got to come in,
shows up,
mess it up. And he says, no irrelevant conversation, return to your station. Second takes off.
Oh, you know what he says also? He goes, not only no irrelevant conversation, you know what the punishment is for that. And then Second says, deactivation.
Deactivation.
So basically, it's death. If you have a relevant conversation, it is death. But he doesn't kill him at this point. Nope, doesn't happen. And he does order him to return to his station.
I would have been dead a long time ago. So I got killed for all my conversation is irrelevant. So that's the only conversation I know.
You would not have made a good drone. You would have been deactivated day one.
No,
so that's
I go off on tangents all the time. Anyway.
But the important thing about this scene, though, Robbie, is this is the very, very first time that we have a sense of bonding between the character of Seven and Second, who we later learn is Icheb. I mean, this is the beginning of the bonding of their relationship together, of the trust that is beginning to form between those two characters.
Yeah. We go to the ready room next.
Seven comes in, right? She hands Janeway a pad da-da-da-da, as you so famously called it, and she has discovered some information, some saucy information in the communication records.
Yes.
The collective did receive the drone's initial distress call, but the collective declared these neonatal drones as irrelevant and severed their connection to the hive permanently. So they're basically dead to the hive, to the rest of the Borg collective. Yeah. And the drones are completely unaware of this because they do not have the ability, because they're not completely mature, to decrypt the message. Janeway says that if they knew that they were rejected, they wouldn't need the deflector. And they might be willing to release the hostages. And Seven says, normally, when drones learn that they are irrelevant, they automatically, without any hesitation, deactivate themselves. But that these drones, these juvenile drones, are completely unpredictable, and they may not adhere to these Borg protocols. So basically, Janeway wants to keep this information, close to her vest for now. But she says there's another option. We could invite them to Voyager. They can come on over. Seven says,
Seven's like, that's not going to be easy.
No,
that's not going to be easy at all to turn them into individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then Seven has this great speech about her own assimilation.
Yeah.
And basically, as the camera pushes in on this long, very well done speech, she says, it was the Borg sense of order that helped me discover my individuality.
Yeah.
If I had not gone through the full maturation process, if I had not become a Borg and been able to manage the feelings and the emotions that have come up for me as I, find my humanity, I wouldn't have survived. And she says the kids don't have that. They have not matured to a full sense of Borg order. So it's really it's a pickle that Seven's she's kind of saying, you know, we can't just throw them out, you know, into opening up their individuality. They won't be able to process.
And Seven ends that whole long, awesome speech with, "Not all drones can be saved, Captain." Yeah. And Janeway orders Seven to continue her repairs in the cube. Hold on to this new information for now. Don't divulge it to the juvenile drones. But Janeway tells Seven, as she's exiting the ready room, she says, "The drones do have one thing going for them. You." Mm-hmm. "There's anyone who can reach them. It's you." So that was a nice little tag.
Nice there. Janeway.
Yeah. Nice Janeway. All right. So next we go back to the Borg cube and you see Harry. And Harry is placing playing cards inside different parts of it. He says, "Three of hearts on a transwarp conduit. King of clubs on a power coupling." And Harry's basically marking his route with playing cards in case he has to come back the same way. And Tuvok, you hear Tuvok's voice, and he says, "You shouldn't distract yourself, Ensign." And Harry says, "You know what? I need a little distraction. And this hike is bringing up some bad memories." Then we cut to a shot of Tuvok in astrometrics with the view screen in astrometrics showing sort of a map of the cube. And a little red dot is Harry, I guess. And he's sort of guiding Harry through this cube. And then, you know, Tuvok makes a quip like, "Oh, like bad memories, like the last time that you were in a Borg
mission or something." Yeah, you think Harry's talking about a really bad Borg encounter. Right. And Harry goes, No, it was a haunted house that my parents took me to when I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
So,
I do like Harry's backpack. It's a cool looking space, modern looking backpack.
You can
do that for the final shot there, the final moments of that scene. Back in another part of the Borg cube, we have Seven continuing repairs, and she informs first that the resonance field has collapsed and it will take an hour to reinitialize. And first, again, just loses it. He's like, "Wait, these delays, these are all intentional.
You're stalling.
You're
doing this on purpose." Yeah. She shows him the data on the pad, says this data is flawed. And and she even says, "Your understanding of this data is flawed."
So exactly. Like, I love how she puts him in his place every time.
And when she says that, though, when she says, "Your understanding of this is flawed."
Yeah.
That's a real, you know, tough
it is
criticism.
But the thing is, I think First understands he's not completely matured. He doesn't have all the information to handle at being a full adult drone. And she's calling him out on it. And her saying that his understanding of quadric field theory is flawed, that's the reason that everything is that he doesn't understand it. And I think he gets it. And he's just like, okay. But he's trying to play the tough leader guy. And he says, he tells the other drones to ignore her. She's trying to divide us.
But you can see that when she says your understanding is flawed, the other drones turn.
They're all like, "Oh,
how
boy.
Dare her." Yeah. She, I can't believe she said that.
She's saying that.
And then she continues. She says that she remembers the unity of the collective, the common goals, the quest for perfection. But she says, "You don't have to remain drones to experience those things. You can come back to Voyager and have common goals and be a part of a collective." So she's really starting to plant these seeds with all the other drones, these kids.
Yeah.
And before, you know, she can succeed at that, an alarm sounds.
Yep.
The maturation chamber is failing. And one of the Borg infants is dying, basically, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to have to save it. And this is the little doll, robot puppet doll in the fish tank.
Yeah. But First says it will adapt. It is Borg, but yet it's not adapting. And Mazzotti says, "Let Seven help." And here is the beginning of where he's starting to realize he's way in this above. It's way over his head. He can't handle any of this stuff. So he does step aside and he lets Seven work on this. He tries to use a stasis field, but then the stasis field starts to degrade. And so now Seven says, you know, "We've got to transport this infant drone to an incubation pod." The minute that Seven beams this little infant drone into the incubation pod, the pod starts malfunctioning. So Seven says, basically she pulls it out of the pod, and it's, you can hear this, like, you know, very belabored breathing from this little infant. Mazzotti asks, what's happening? She goes, well, its respiratory function is impaired, and the infant needs to be transported to Voyager with proper, proper medical, you know, facility to treat this infant drone. First says, no, this drone is part of our collective. And second says, not if it dies. So again, this is the beginnings of all the other, you know, younger drones sort of kind of now talking back, because, you know, they realize that First is not all he is cracked up to be. So now we're back in the Borg corridors. We see Harry. He's setting the plasma charge. His transmission with Tuvok fritzes out. Now he can't hear Tuvok at all. Mm-hmm. He hears a sound. He quickly jumps. He, you know, it's very jumpy. He turns and he's freaked out. He's,
there's the little girl.
Yeah. Well, and actually, he didn't see the girl first. He turns to the left where the sound comes from. And then he's like, oh, okay, it's cool. That was nothing. And he turns to the right and there's the little girl. Boy, is she scary. She's almost creepy. Like those two little girls, twins from The Shining, that are at the end of the hallway.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
She's sitting there and she pulls out all the cards. She's like, I found these, you left these. And I'm like, okay.
And then she takes the queen of hearts. Yes. And she says, this looks like Seven.
Yeah, I like her. She reminds me of Seven. And she's saying this in a totally straight voice, right? Yeah. Good job by Marley S. McClane in this scene. Harry slowly reaches for his phaser. And again, very nonchalantly, Mazzotti says, your weapon won't work here. Dampening field. And Harry's like, oh my God, I'm screwed at this point.
We're in the hallway. Tuvok tells Janeway that he's lost Harry's signal. Janeway says, keep looking. And suddenly the doctor calls, please report to sickbay, Captain. So we go to sickbay.
Yeah.
And there's the baby. They did transport the baby over. And the doctor has saved this baby.
Robbie, did you think, when you were watching this scene, did you think, hey, who knew we had a Starfleet crib on board? I mean, like, why is that there? I mean, was that there? I guess we used it for Naomi. And is that right?
I don't know.
It was just very funny that we had
that. Yeah. Doctor's got a big closet with lots of things. And the doctor asks Janeway to, well, first Janeway says Seven must have sent her over. Right, so let's take care of this baby.
Yeah.
The doctor says, hold this baby while he works.
Yeah.
Because the baby's crying and struggling. And she's
trying to take some readings, right?
Yeah. Scan the baby. And Janeway's holding it. And I love the look on Kate's face. Like, the maternal Kate came out in the scene. You just see she's, you know, infatuated with this.
She is. But here's something that I'm going to bring up now. I don't think we ever see that infant ever again.
No, we don't.
After this episode, I mean, clearly the doctor has saved the infant, right? He's healed the infant. The infant's not dying any longer.
Yes.
But we never see the infant again. So I just, you know, there's a little bit of a hole in the plot here now.
Yeah. In the series.
Plot. In the series. Excuse me. Yeah. And that kind of bugged me. We could have.
Yeah. You know. I agree. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, especially with all the dramatic looks that Kate had with this baby. You feel like there's a bonding moment. And she's going to take over this, you know, parenting of this thing in the series. And she doesn't.
So. Yeah. Like, this is going to be the captain's assistant's assistant, this little baby. Right. So, the doctor does remember that the pathogen is synthesized, and he pulls up this vial of liquid. Now, here's the thing. All right. I think that they should have chosen a really fluffy, light pink color or a sky blue, something other than dark. It was like a dark brownish, you know, and it looked like it would be pathogeny. But I just thought that, you know, let's go opposite of what we think pathogens will look like. Meaning puke green, dirty brown, you know, puke yellow. Yeah. Let's go with something different.
Yeah.
Pink, cotton candy colored pink, you know, would have been
That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But he's got that there. Doctor says, I can't believe that you would use this on him. He still can't believe that this is an option. Janeway says, only if I have to. And she looks at the baby and she says, let's hope your brothers and sisters don't force my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have that threat of maybe we're going to kill these kids with a bioweapon.
That's right.
It'd be horrible.
That would be bad. It's
very out of character. We go to the chamber, and First has the plasma charge now that Harry was setting, and he's got Harry. And
I like how he walks over to, because he says, can you identify this device? And she's like, plasma charge. Then he walks over to the other juvenile drones who are standing together like they're pins in a bowling alley, right? And then they move apart to reveal Harry,
that's
completely, you know, he's unconscious,
Borg.
Semi-Borgified.
Nanoprobes coming out of his face and stuff. Yeah. He's turning Borg.
Yeah.
Seven says he needs medical attention to survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And first says, give me the deflector. And Seven tries to stall again, but he's like, no more delays, no more deceptions.
Yeah. And he says, resistance is futile. And Seven gives him this look like she is about to throw him over her lap and give him an old fashioned spanking. Mm. That was a look that she gave him. But I remember talking to Allison about, we were talking about how, like, should I be lying completely flat, you know what I'm saying, like when they found me on the ground, or but then she felt like, you know, they spent all this time in the makeup department putting on this silver stuff where you kind of see the nanoprobes are congealing or whatever, that they really wanted to showcase that. And so that's why we decided that I would sit and I'd be propped up against that bulkhead with my face kind of turned to showcase the makeup job, really.
The makeup.
So, yeah, to make it look good. But I just remember shooting in that position, I had to have my eyes closed like the entire time. And we come back to this exact same set later when the episode starts heading towards the climax, and I'm just sitting there, and again my eyes are closed, and that for me was like, it was like death, because I want to see everything. So having to sit there with my eyes closed while this whole scene is happening around me was just so frustrating as an actor. I was like, oh God, you know, but I had to do it. Okay. So we're on the Voyager bridge, and First tells Janeway to comply. Janeway on the view screen, Janeway tells him to return Harry. Then we can talk. First says, enough talking, comply or we will assimilate the others. And Janeway says, you know, she just can't give him the deflector. It'll take an hour to dismantle. And he just quickly ends the transmission, the call, and locks on a tractor beam.
Tractor beams the deflector. Yeah. They're trying to tear it off the ship.
Yeah.
Janeway's like, we got to modulate shields. Yeah. We're trying everything to keep them from ripping our ship apart.
Yeah.
We go into the chamber again, and Seven says, even if they take this deflector, so she spills the beans.
Yeah.
Even if you take this thing, all right, we know that you're not going to be able to rejoin the collective. They've severed your connection. And First can't believe it. He's like, you're lying. So First responds, no, that can't be possible. You're lying. And Seven gives them the encryption code to check for themselves.
In data grid 426.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he doesn't, but Second steps forward.
Well, he starts towards the console, but First tells him to return to a station. So he hesitates. But now he's got the confidence. He's bonded with Seven a little bit. He's like, whatever.
Yeah.
He walks right up to that console, punches in a few things. He's like, wait a minute. And a good job by Manu in playing that, you know, he played the reaction of knowing that they're irrelevant. He played that first. And then he says, it's accurate. It's authentic. And First checks himself, and he still doesn't believe it. He goes, no, this is a mistake.
Yeah,
and Seven says, you know, the collective doesn't tolerate imperfection. And he replies with, well, then fine. We will assimilate more species and prove that we're worthy. So still not trying to, you know, go along with the flow. First is still trying to cause problems here, and just doesn't believe it. We have an exterior space shot of the Borg tractor beam locked on to Voyager's deflector.
Battle's going on. He's trying to rip it off. We're trying to figure out how to save our ship. Yeah, we're modulating our shields, trying to buy. B'Elanna says that'll buy us another minute at most.
Yeah.
Tuvok. Detects a fluctuation that could allow them to deploy the pathogen.
Yeah. It's Tuvok a fluctuation
pushing
the death.
Yeah. I don't get it. Anyway, go ahead.
The fluctuation is so intermittent that we can't beam our Voyager heroes out of there, but we can deploy the bioweapon. And you're right. I mean, Tuvok is
pushing this calculated
death monger in this
episode.
Kill
the kids. He really hates teenagers, doesn't he?
He does. That's what I think it is. He can't stand teenagers.
But Janeway's looking for any alternative.
I love Janeway's response to Tuvok when he says that there is no alternative. Janeway says there is always an alternative. We just need to find it. So Janeway, good for her. And she has this revelation. And I love Kate's depiction. You know, Kate's acting in this scene is great. She's totally focused in, and she realizes their tractor beam. It draws power from the same grid as their shield matrix. So Janeway quickly orders Torres to use our deflector to send a feedback pulse along the beam to disrupt their shields. Torres is a little sketchy on that. You know, she thinks,
yeah, okay, it was not a warp particles moment.
Wasn't. Yeah,
Lana's like, no.
She's like,
if that doesn't work, yeah, it'll do more damage.
You know what it was
to us? Then
that's right. Yeah. It was a warp moment. So it was only half of a warp particles moment.
But Lana says, if it doesn't work, though, that it could do more damage to us than the cube.
That's right.
But Janeway says, it's going to work.
It's so, going to work. Trust me. She should have said, warp particles moment. Trust me, is what she should have said.
Exactly.
Okay.
We go back in the chamber. Seven says, reiterating, you don't have a future with the collective.
Yeah.
You're going to have to make decisions for yourself.
Right.
As individuals. And suddenly the cube shakes. Mm-hmm. And Voyager sending this feedback pulse through, and Second goes over, he checks the monitor to see what's happening, and the feedback pulse is overloading their shield matrix, and it's going to destroy the cube. Yeah. And First screams, "Adapt!" He just will not give up.
No,
we go back to the bridge. Tuvok says that both the cube's tractor beam and the shield are weakening. So Janeway's idea is working.
Yeah.
And Torres says they've got a transporter lock on all the crew members except for Harry and Seven. So they beam over Chakotay, Neelix, and Paris from the assimilation chamber where they've been kept. They still can't get a lock on Kim and Seven. Their location is too heavily shielded. So Janeway orders, increase this feedback pulse, amplify the feedback pulse, make it stronger.
Double it up.
We go to the chamber, and the little girl says, "Oh, the three hostages have been beamed out. We've lost them." Second reports that the shields are weakening in the room that they're in right now. The drones all turn to First for orders, but he doesn't know what to do at this point.
Yeah.
And Seven just says, "Drop your shields. Nobody has to get hurt here if you just drop your shields."
Yeah, and he won't do it. And now he flips out. He grabs some type of, I don't know what it is. It looked like, I don't know, what did that look like? It looked like a buoy or something like that you would have in the ocean.
Well, First she goes over. He's not going to do
it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Seven goes over to try to turn off the shields. Right. Like, she's like, "Drop your shields."
Right.
He won't do it. He stands there. So she goes over, and then he goes and takes her and throws her on the ground.
Did you buy that? Because she has nanoprobes running in her body, so she's pretty strong. She shouldn't have been able to be thrown like that.
No,
right?
I didn't buy it as a character. I didn't buy it. I didn't even buy the way that she did it. It looked like she sort of fell back into a beanbag chair off camera or something. It was very, and then the fact that she's supposed to be knocked unconscious from that, I didn't buy it.
And then he
throws her down, then he goes and grabs these two giant ostrich eggs. I don't know, they were just
like what you'd people that are working for the airlines when they're putting headsets on, the grounds crew that are
holding
things that they're wearing them,
but they were big round
massive
things. And he's gonna go over and hit her on the head. He's gonna
bean her and take her out, basically.
Yeah, he goes over to do that.
Second stops First from doing that. He fights him down and he stands up for Seven finally, which is nice to see that happen.
Yeah. First orders him, Ichab back to his station, or Second back to his station. He does not obey the order. Seven finally wakes up from her not so rough fall.
Yes.
Basically just from a standing position to down on the ground. I don't know why that knocked her out so much.
Yeah.
She says, we're going to be destroyed any second.
Yeah.
And First runs over to a console, trying one more thing to prevent this from happening. The console explodes.
Mm-hmm. Just sends this shock through him, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So he short circuits basically.
Yeah. He falls down.
Yeah.
That was not a bad fall when he gets the shock.
Yeah. It was not bad.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad. But for me, I'm going to say right now that I felt that performance because it was, in my estimation, so one note. I have no problem with him being sassy in the beginning, but I feel like if there were more levels going on where he was questioning himself, you know, throughout all the interactions with Seven, where maybe it showed a little bit of, like, you know, hesitation and doubt and this and that, and that maybe, you know, he's feeling like he's taking the wrong stance in dealing and dealing with this, then we maybe would have bought in a little bit more and we would have cared about him a little bit more when he got shocked, and it would have been sadder. It would have been more of a tearjerker to see him pass away. You know, that's all. I just felt it was a little too one note.
Well, it's sad because when he does go down and Seven says she can't help him, his cortical implants are depolarizing.
Yeah.
And he reaches up and takes her hand and looks her in the eyes and says, "We are Borg."
Yeah.
And it's a sweet moment. And it's for Seven, it's a really sweet moment because you see that she's feeling this caretaking and connection with these young, you know, Borg kids.
Right.
But he dies.
Yeah. I mean, it's written to be the tearjerker moment. It is. Right. And but you don't, for me, I didn't get that feeling. Because it wasn't, like I said, if you set me up earlier where, yes, he looks like the crazy, brash, you know, rebellious teenager. And then, but yet, then he doubts himself. So then maybe I'm not doing the right thing. Maybe Seven is trying to help us. So if he showed that struggle a little bit more, I think I would have been more, you know, prone to maybe cry a little bit over his death and that line, you know, "We are Borg." But, you know, you can't have everything. I guess.
Well, it was sad to me. It was very sweet. And his hand drops down after he dies. The kids all stare at him. And then Seven orders the shields to be lowered, and Second does it.
Yeah.
And we go to a space shot. There's a captain's log. Janeway says that Harry's recovering in sick bay, and the doc removed most of his implants, but he's got some recovery left. And the kids have also had most of their implants removed, but the kids are very troubled, is the word Janeway uses. We have four troubled kids here. And we go to the ready room, and Janeway she tells Seven that she sent hails to any ships in the area from their planets, the Bernalis, the Norcadians, and the twins. They don't even know what species they're from. So they're going to have to find that out before they can send hails to try to, you know, reunite them with the people that they're from. And Janeway says they need someone to help them until they can find, you know, their people.
Yeah.
And then Seven goes, "I've never been responsible for children." You see, she's like, "I don't want to do this."
Yeah.
And Janeway says, "Well, you can help them avoid the pitfalls that you faced when you were severed from the collective." And I love Jerry's exit when she's like, she takes a deep breath and then she sort of rolls her eyes as she walks out the door. It's not sentimental at all. I thought it was very funny. It just made me laugh. It's like, yeah, that's how Seven would feel.
I didn't catch that.
She was like, "Oh, I got to deal with these teenagers."
My note, though, there's a little bit of an inconsistency for me. Because Seven, after we take her out of her Borgness and we take the implants out, that skin tight suit is supposedly dermal, you know, it's medical, a reason why she's wearing it. So I feel like all those juveniles should have been in very similar Olympic speed skating like suits. They should have been in it should have matched what Seven was wearing, but they didn't do that. So
that's a good catch.
Yeah, it bothered me a little bit.
Okay, so we're in the cargo bay and the kids are all there dressed in their blue clothes. They kind of look more like Seven now with just some little pieces of nanoprobes. They look more like kids.
Yeah.
And Seven gives each of them a pad that gives some of the data that she's downloaded from the cube about each of them.
Yeah.
And she says Second's name is Icheb.
Right. And did you notice how many times he hit that pad?
No.
And I always joke about this. I say like guest stars always, and well, he's a recurring, but they always either push too few buttons or too many. He grabs the pad and does this. He does this. And so then, of course,
I did notice that.
Yeah. So they had to put in that sound effect of him hitting it. It's like, it's just like, what, dude, you've never even seen a pad before. You're not going to know how to operate it that quickly, you know? So no. Anyway, so we know he's Icheb.
Yes. Yeah, and he says that was my father's second name. So you know, he's getting, all these kids are getting a little bit of information, yeah, and then it's triggering these memories for each of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, Seven says to Mazadi that your name is Mazadi. Mm-hmm. And she kind of goes, wow, that's a pretty name.
Yeah.
And the twins we learn are Azan and Rebbe.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I'll tell you more about them tomorrow, but it's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
And so they go into their alcoves and close their eyes and basically go to sleep for regeneration. And Seven has the computer dim the lights and she says, sleep tight. Good night, she says, and sweet dreams.
Yeah.
And she walks out and takes a little sweet look back at him. It was very sweet.
Yeah. Nice. Do you remember us talking about, I think we, in a, or an episode much earlier than this, we talked about how, why are there all these extra board?
I thought about that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, it's convenient that we have those.
That we have those extra board recharging stations there, and we now know.
So, just in case we pick up a bunch of stray kids,
stray board drones, we have them, and in fact, we did. So there we go. Okay. Well, what is your lesson, or what is
this
your
This was a tough one for theme? Me.
Yeah.
My theme, I wrote down two different thoughts that I had. One is just the idea that growing up is hard. Growing up is not easy. That was one takeaway for me.
Yeah.
It's not easy for anybody, especially bored kids.
Yeah.
The other theme I got, maybe this is a reach, but that we all have that sort of inner child inside of us, even when we're older, even when we may have forgotten a lot of things, that there's mm-hmm. that we all have an inner child somewhere in us that has those memories and feelings and connections. And, you know, that's what I took from this, is that each of these kids had sort of forgotten that inner child, forgotten their mm-hmm. names, their families, who they really were. And so
learning
how to kind of go back and remember.
Yeah.
Who that is for them was relatable for me.
That's a different angle. Yeah, I like that. I think for me, overall, it's just a lesson in patience. Because you just have to have patience when you're dealing with teenagers. And you have to, you can't immediately, you know, scream and yell back and go to, you know, match their level. It does nothing, you know, to do that. And, you know, physical discipline, that's out.
Probably
that's been gone for a while.
I think a theme is like, don't try not to use bioweapons on
teenagers. Yeah.
Teenagers. That would be a takeaway.
So really that is the lesson. You don't need to go nuclear on when your teenager at home you know, gives you sass, which they do every day, right? So you need to have patience and not use a bioweapon on your teenager.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's a very simple lesson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ratings. My rating for this, I have to be honest, the premise is interesting. The kids were all good.
Yeah.
I thought there was a lot of things out of character in this episode.
Yeah.
And it didn't, even though the idea of these, you know, stowaway or these bored kids, us having to deal with bored kids, the idea is cool. It just didn't, something about it didn't quite gel for me. So I'm going to give it a 7.
If those inconsistencies in character were not in this episode, what would you have given it?
Probably an 8.5 or something.
I agree.
But I think it just never quite landed for me because of those inconsistencies. So I kept wanting it to work better. The idea was cool. I just wanted a little more out of it. And so I'll stick with the 7. What about you?
I'm going to ignore the inconsistencies in character and I'm going to give it an 8.2.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what our captain and admiral ratings for Collective this week. The average rating is 7.5.
Ah.
Wow.
Okay.
That's right about in between you and me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
I would go with 7.5 even, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool.
There it is.
Well, that was fun. What is next week's episode?
Next week is basically the sequel to Fairhaven, Spirit Folk.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And I hope you remember some of this stuff. I hope you do.
We'll see.
We'll see. Talk about it when we
get into it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And all of you Patreon patrons, please stay tuned.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.